An 8-month investigation into Andrew Cuomo, which was launched by the Assembly Judiciary Committee, was publicized the Monday before Thanksgiving, corroborating aspects of the Attorney General's review of alleged sexual misconduct by the former governor, and broke new grounds in terms of the public's understanding of the government resources used to write Cuomo's pandemic memoir, for which he had a contract in excess of $5 million. To discuss the findings in the 63-page report, what they mean, and how they should be used, we're joined by Assembly Judiciary Committee member Phil Steck, a Capital Region Democrat. Welcome back to the show, Assembly member.
Morning, Dave, and thank you for having me.
So, to you, what is the most damning or meaningful part of this report?
Well, I think it's three things. One is the corroboration of the Attorney General's findings on sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it's the use of the governor's office or the executive chamber, so-called, basically as a book publishing company. And then thirdly, I think it is significant that material misrepresentations were made concerning nursing home deaths resulting from COVID.
So let's explore all those different avenues, starting with the corroboration of the findings of sexual misconduct, where the AG's report focused on the allegations from 11 women. This report really highlighted two women in particular, a former executive assistant to Governor Cuomo, as well as a state trooper who served on his duty. Why the limited scope, and what should we take away from these findings in particular?
Well, I think when I read the Attorney General's report, the most extraordinary part of it on sexual harassment were the assertions of the trooper. First of all, the trooper cannot be accused of having any political motivation whatsoever. She was a reluctant witness and only came forward because other troopers had brought that to the attention of the Attorney General. So I think, and interestingly, by the way, when the former governor's spokesman attacks people, he never attacks the trooper.
Although Melissa DeRosa, the former top aide to the governor, has implied that the trooper is trying to extort her, although she hasn't really gone into any depths about what's going on except to highlight some correspondence with an attorney for the trooper. But we don't know anything more than that, and we haven't really fleshed that out in any
way. Well,
shape
I can't comment on that kind of, you know.
But that's what we're hearing from the Cuomo
allies. And rumor and innuendo. Mm-hmm. But the Judiciary Committee report, I think, really highlights the shocking nature of the governor's behavior toward this New York State trooper. Brittany McKimiso has been in the news a lot locally, but and I don't want to comment too much one way or the other about that particular case because it's in the court system, but I think that the allegations concerning the trooper were just so dramatic. There's really no way to get around those. Mm-hmm.
Well, then what should we take away from the fact that the report doesn't go into the same amount of depth for the other women who are highlighted in the Attorney General's report?
Because I think not much, because I think the Attorney General's report covers that conclusively. There was a question raised about a date concerning an incident involving Brittany Commisso, and the Judiciary Committee investigators were able to pin down the date in question as being December 7th, whereas the Attorney General's investigators were not certain as to the date or had a date that may have been incorrect. But I think they were able to, in our report, conclusively establish the date when Commisso claims the governor committed the worst of the violations against her.
Does that matter, determining the date? Because as far as I'm aware, though, there's no additional findings in this report that indicate one way or another what may have happened when Commisso and the former governor were alone, aside from their two different retellings of this event.
Yes, that's always an issue when you have these type of cases. But I think the Commisso assertions are corroborated by the behavior towards numerous other witnesses. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the role of the other witnesses is, including the trooper. So, no one had a camera. But that is, and no one was, you know, filming these incidents as they occurred. But That's very normal in cases of this type. So you have to make a determination as to who's most likely telling the truth. If it were one alleged incident, that's one thing. But when you have, I think it's up to 13 now, different claims of similar behavior, though the most egregious was committed against Brittany Commisso, I think it makes Commisso highly credible, and I think that is the overall point of the Judiciary Committee report.
So then turning to that second area you mentioned, which is the pandemic memoir, which for my money was also really the big takeaway from reading this report, because it felt like it broke new ground, because we had a lot more anecdotes from staff about their experience, including, you know, one senior state official explaining that book-related assignments were given by superiors, expected to be completed, and that work was, you know, not voluntary. In terms of government resources, you know, basically using people who are public employees for this purpose, why does that matter? Why is that problematic?
Well, if I ran my political campaign out of my assembly office, I would surely be indicted. And the hypocrisy of the governor in this area is incredible, because throughout his term, from time to time, he would introduce legislation aimed at the legislature to try and prevent us ever from having any staff member volunteer on a campaign. But this is a situation where he basically converted his office into a book publishing company for himself. And here's a really big difference. He was governor of the state of New York with a $30 million campaign account. He could have easily, many politicians write books, he could have easily used his campaign account to hire a book writing team and not been involved with the use of any state resources. This, as the staff people testified to the committee, this was distracting their attention from their proper focus on COVID things. And also, there was this micromanagement of everything related to COVID by the governor's office. This was not seen as it should have been, as a public health emergency that needed to be handled through the State Department of Health and the various county departments of health, which is the way these things were handled in the past. It was seen right from the get-go as an opportunity for this governor to publicize himself politically, and thus properly a subject for his campaign committee and not his governmental position.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Assembly Judiciary Committee member Phil Steck about the committee's recently released report into Governor Andrew Cuomo and alleged misconduct by him personally and his administration. And you highlighted something I think is important there, because it's not just that he's reportedly using taxpayer-funded resources for potentially personal gain, but it's at the expense of efforts that could have been toward a pandemic. And this is at a time when people are allegedly working 24/7 on keeping the public safe, but that's obviously not true if people are also helping edit a book and provide insight.
One of the strengths of the governor politically was he understood the bully pulpit of his position, and he would command attention from the press that other people like legislators could not possibly command that attention. So out in my district, I had a number of people who felt that the governor saved us from COVID. Well, they felt that way because he told them that he did. Meanwhile, we had mass resignations from the Department of Health because there was interference by the governor's office in the way that the state organizes a response to infectious disease. And that certainly was not helpful for handling this pandemic. Traditionally, the Department of Health does it in conjunction with the county departments of health. Mm-hmm. But in this instance, everything had to be approved by the governor's office, and that's a real problem.
Do you feel like that process was fleshed out in this report? Because we definitely got an understanding of that from a recently released transcript from a top former DOH official from the Attorney General's review. But what about in terms of the Assembly's inquiry? Do you feel like we broke new ground in that area with your findings as well?
They were focused on the book publishing. Mm-hmm. More than the resignation of top DOH officials. That was not within the assignment that was given by the speaker to investigate. But the two are linked because you clearly had in the report people who worked as part of the task force on the pandemic complaining that they were not focusing on the pandemic but focusing on the book. Another interesting thing, too, is about the nursing home deaths. The report makes clear that there's a chapter in the book on the nursing homes. So the manipulation of nursing home data, it's a reasonable inference to conclude that that was done to make the book look better. So that's not, again, not effective government.
Reasonable inference. Is that a meaningful standard? Is that some sort of legal standard? Because that's something we've seen thrown around a lot in recent days in terms of the discussion of this report.
Yes, reasonable inference is a standard that's used in law all the time. You don't have to have smoking gun evidence mm-hmm. to reach a conclusion in law, but there are inferences that can be drawn based upon the facts, and it's clear that if you have a book chapter on the nursing home and then they're suppressing nursing home information, clearly they're trying to make themselves look better in the book.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our discussion about the Assembly Judiciary Committee's impeachment report into former Governor Andrew Cuomo with Assembly Judiciary Committee member Phil Steck. When we get back, we'll discuss how the Cuomo administration handled pandemic information, the Assembly Judiciary Committee's decision not to subpoena Governor Cuomo, and how, if at all, the findings of government resources being used by the Cuomo administration for the publication of the governor's pandemic memoir should affect the way we think about legislative staff volunteering for their bosses' political campaigns.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our conversation about the Assembly Judiciary Committee's recently released findings into misconduct by former Governor Andrew Cuomo as a part of their 8-month impeachment investigation. And our guest is Assembly Judiciary Committee member Phil Steck. So Assembly Judiciary Committee Chair Chuck Levine has said that the report found unlawful behavior by the Cuomo administration in terms of the disclosure or lack of disclosure of pandemic-related information to the legislature. What is it about the information they shared or how the information was presented or the information they just didn't share that may have violated state law?
When the legislature passes a bill that directs the provision of information by the executive branch and the executive branch doesn't comply, that's a violation of law. Unfortunately, in a lot of these areas, the sanction often is to bring litigation to compel the response that you're already entitled to. So it often doesn't have a lot of consequences. I have no idea whether there were any criminal laws broken in this context.
It doesn't appear that Governor Cuomo took part in this investigation in any way, shape, or form. There were no subpoenas sent to him by the Judiciary Committee. What does that mean? Does that mean we
didn't get
the full picture?
I don't think that means anything. I mean, the governor testified for, 7 hours or something?
Yeah, I think even more than that.
More than that. I mean, he was vintage Andrew Cuomo.
But that's for the AG's investigation.
Yes, but transcript is the transcript.
But we didn't get a full picture about, say, his pandemic memoir from that.
Well, the claim is the people were volunteering. Mm-hmm. That's the claim. So the way you find out if people were volunteering is not by interviewing the governor. You find out by interviewing the people who were allegedly volunteering.
But you could find out, say, if he directed people to volunteer or whether it stemmed from, say, Melissa DeRosa or other top aides.
he clearly, as governor, was responsible and knew that they were all working on the book. I don't think there's, I think that's true beyond a reasonable doubt. First of all, there was not enough hours in the day for these people to be both volunteering and doing their regular governmental duties. Second of all, many of them told the investigators that they were not volunteering. And thirdly, there were lower level people who were explicitly ordered to work on the book. Whether the governor wants to sit for another interview and be aggressive towards the investigators like he was towards the attorney general's investigators, I don't really see what that gains. One of the other factors here is we didn't impeach the governor because he resigned.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of the report was to bring the facts out that were already found and investigated for the benefit of the public. If the governor was impeached, then the governor would have the opportunity to testify before the Senate and rebut any of these allegations that might have been made by others or claim, like Sergeant Schultz and Hogan's Heroes, I know nothing. I don't think that's a very viable position for the governor, former governor, to take.
But there was a four-plus-month period when the investigation was going on where he still was in office. So was it a mistake for the committee not to subpoena him?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that his lawyer was submitting things. They were requesting documents. The governor's office did not comply.
A request is that's different than a subpoena for documents, right?
Well, what's the difference? If you're interested in cooperating with an investigation, you provide them what they're asked for. The subpoena just means that if you don't provide it, then you can be held in contempt. It has nothing to do with
seems more serious.
It's more serious, but you don't refuse to give information to an investigatory body of the legislature just because it's not a subpoena. That's silly.
Okay.
So they didn't cooperate, as the report found. And again, one of the reasons for the delay in the report was the constant correspondence from the governor's counsel arguing this, that, and the other thing. So they needed to review that and see if it really raised any issues. It didn't. I think the idea that the governor, with an army of attorneys and the giant staff that he has, somehow was denied due process, it's not like comparing him with all those resources to someone who's arrested on a crime, which he wasn't arrested, who's arrested on a crime and lacks the resources to defend themselves. It's completely different.
Well, I guess we'll never know, though, how he would have handled it. But
you can see how he would have handled it from the interview he did with the Attorney
That's
General.
One
he wouldn't
interview.
Have handled it
That's
differently.
One interview. So now that the report is out, though, the governor has been gone for 3+ months. How should the report be used?
Well, from my perspective, having been a member of the Assembly while Andrew Cuomo was governor, I felt this governorship was problematic from day one.
And you've been vocal about it.
You're
not late to the party.
I tried not to be too aggressive on that point earlier in my terms, but it became clear to me over time that there was just too much personal control by the governor, number one. Number two, that the governor's office in the state of New York has acquired disproportionate power through the governor's control of the budget, which he uses as a club to bludgeon people who might disagree with him. He also really held the other electeds who were not his equal in standing in great disdain, and I don't think that's effective government when that's the attitude that you have. So the use of this report is to show what happens when you have a governorship that's out of control and the arrogance of it all. And we need to be taking steps to make sure that doesn't happen again. You know, it is in part about the personality of the person who holds the office, but it's not only about that. It's about the structure. Giving the governor control over the budget is not something that was ever envisioned in any democracy, and not certainly by our founding fathers. Why we need to do that in New York, I don't get it. It doesn't help.
In light of what this report has showed us about how the governor used government resources to his own personal benefit, do you think it is worth reexamining how legislative staff serve in a volunteer capacity for the campaigns of their lawmakers? Because it can be a uncomfortable situation for legislative staff. You are a lawmaker. You're shaking your head no.
I think this is just a bunch of baloney that's okay. coming out of the governor to try. Rich has a
having
party.
Well, let me put this. I've reported on this for multiple years now, and I've spoken to former staff members, and they say it's being voluntold. So do you think you feel like that doesn't exist? You feel like they're concerned?
I didn't say it doesn't exist. I can only speak for my own office and the things I have knowledge of. But to take up the cause of Rich as a party who spent 10 years basically responding to people who had any criticism of the governor with personal insults, name-calling, and pointing the finger at everybody else. Look, one of the fundamental principles behind this governorship was anything bad that happened in the state, the legislature's to blame for it, whereas I am the one who creates everything that's good. And that is certainly not the case. And I will make the point that we don't use our legislative office as a political office.
Not the actual office, but the staff will work volunteer on campaigns.
Some of them don't.
Some of them don't, but a lot of them do.
So you
don't think it's worth revisiting at this point?
I think it's nothing. I think it's a petty little thing. If someone's a member of the Democratic Committee in the town of Colony and goes out and carries petitions for every Democratic candidate and was doing that before they joined the assembly office, how is that forcing them to volunteer? I don't see that. The other thing is that the governor, we're dealing with full-time employees of the governor that were being compelled to do these things. My office, we have two full-time employees, and we have two part-time.
Right.
So the resources of the governor's office were tremendous. He could have easily ran a book operation, if that's what he wanted to do, out of his multi-million-dollar campaign fund. He chose not to do so. So the comparison to anything about some staffer volunteering on a legislative campaign, it's really just another Rich as a party effort to deflect attention from the wrongdoing of the governor.
In light of what was uncovered in terms of the state's response to the pandemic, do you think a deeper, more expansive probe of the state's response is warranted? Something that takes the same very significant approach that the investigators for the Judiciary Committee took to this topic, tasking lawyers with subpoena power to do a very wide-ranging look back?
I think when it comes to the handling of the pandemic right now, I think what's more important is what we do going forward.
Okay.
The Attorney General, as part of a gubernatorial campaign, has made suggestions as to how the pandemic should be handled. I know that the current governor is certainly concerned about the increase in COVID cases. I think we know enough that the mistakes made by Andrew Cuomo should not be repeated, and that we need to trust the experts in the Department of Health as to how best to handle these matters. That was the irony of the whole Cuomo administration, is he would go on the press conference and he would say, trust the experts. Yeah. And then he would give an interview and say, I don't trust any experts. Because in New York State, there was only one expert, Andrew Cuomo.
When the investigation was initially convened, one of the threads that investigators were going to pull out was the potential cover-up of some safety concerns during the construction of the Mario Cuomo Bridge. It doesn't seem like we got any significant findings in that area from this report. So does that mean those concerns that the administration at the time was covering up potential safety concerns were not valid, or that they just didn't find information to approve them?
So that assertion came out of allegations by a whistleblower concerning the bolts on the bridge. There's no evidence at all that the former governor was in any way involved in trying to suppress what the whistleblower had said about the bolts. Rather, the Department of Transportation conducted an investigation and concluded that there was no threat to the safety of the bridge. And further, there was litigation by the whistleblower against the state, which was defended by the Attorney General. And the Attorney General's office appears to have reached the conclusion that there was no significant safety problem with the bridge. Had the governor been involved in trying to steer the DOT or the AG in a particular direction, it would be a different situation. That was what we were tasked with finding out. There was no evidence that that took place, and, you know, the report said so, and actually the Judiciary Committee terminated that part of the investigation because it wasn't leading anywhere near the governor, which was our focus. So I think that is effectively resolved, at least insofar as the governor is concerned. I'm not aware of any basis now for getting back into the question of the safety of those bolts on the bridge.
So I've been in and around the Capitol for about a decade. You've been serving in the Assembly since 2013. For my money, this is one of the most extensive and thorough examinations of the executive chamber by the legislative branch. Should we see or expect to see more inquiries like this moving forward? Obviously not maybe of an impeachment nature, but where the legislature is really calling out the executive chamber and, you know, asking questions and almost demanding answers for what might be happening over on the other side of
We have the budget hearings, the leaders of the various agencies, the directors, the commissioners, they do testify, and they testify under oath, and they're supposed to be truthful. This investigation came about because there was substantial evidence that the executive chamber was not truthful. It is very dangerous to government if we can't get accurate information from the administrative agencies of the state of New York. They are controlled by the governor. We depend on information from the administrative agencies to legislate. Mm-hmm. So, for example, on one of my bills, the Department of Tax and Finance.
Oh, I thought this would be a stock transfer tax
reference.
You know it.
But here's a good point. They were reporting that it would only raise $5 billion a year, which the economist I was working with said is ridiculous. And it is true that when we finally had the budget hearing, the truth came out and the commissioner said, no, we don't have accurate information because there's massive underreporting of what would be collected. The reason I make that point is, though, that the Ways and Means Committee of the Assembly uses the data that's given by Taxes and Finance to make a determination that, okay, the stock transfer tax, even if we agreed with it, would not be worth it. But I just think that's a really excellent example of how reliant we are on data that comes from the executive. If it's knowingly false, it destroys the whole functioning of government.
So then do we need to have a legislature that is being more aggressive, maybe not necessarily launching impeachment investigations all the time, but launching investigations, using its hearing powers, using subpoena powers more frequently and more, extensively?
Certainly, if there was evidence of untruthfulness.
But isn't that how you find the evidence? You know, if you guys
You don't investigate everything. I mean,
if you see smoke as opposed to
necessarily
seeing fire.
Well, we don't always see smoke. But I would like to investigate why there was underreporting of the potential proceeds of the stock transfer tax. Surely I would.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Assemblyman Phil Steck. He is a Colony Democrat and member of the Judiciary Committee in the Assembly. Assemblymember, thank you so much for making this time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the extensive discussion, Dave.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.